from the humming studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another brightly blooming hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. Hummingbirds are welcome visitors to any garden, and scarlet runner beans are a great way to attract them and get some good bean eating, too. On today's show, we'll guide a listener to scarlet success. Plus your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and curiously concise convolutions. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up faster than Jack's beanstalk, attracting huge hummingbirds.
WDIY has been broadcasting since 1995.
This is Mayor Ken Smith. Congratulations to WDIY for signing on the air.
We're with Commissioner Frank Donches of the Bethlehem Police Department.
We welcome Dr. John on the blend today.
Bob Durow composed, conducted, and played much of the schoolhouse rock music.
Three is a magic number.
Stepping the antidote to violence is to speak up against it.
WDIY for 30 years.
From the windy studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another ecological hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks, You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and in this week's In the News, we present a story by Frank Comer that recently appeared in the Philadelphia Inquirer, for which we are using their title. Once opposed, Atlantic City Wind Farm has become a landmark 20 years later. And we quote, blustery winds propelled the giant blades of five turbines at the Jersey Atlantic Wind Farm on a recent day. Set on a Back Bay island, they were once contested over fears of noise, aesthetics, and worries about threats to shorebirds. But two decades later, they have emerged as a spinning landmark for Atlantic City. The 380-foot turbines silently rotate in clear view of motorists streaming to casinos. Some visitors have even requested hotel rooms facing the structures, which are taller than the Statue of Liberty. The Jersey Atlantic Wind Farm produces 63% of the energy for Atlantic City's wastewater treatment plant, which serves 14 municipalities. Officials calculate the farm has saved ratepayers $8.8 million since its grand opening on December 12, 2005. This was a total home run for everybody involved, says Richard Dovey, president of the Atlantic County Utilities Authority, at the time it was built. It's been successful environmentally and economically. The idea for a wind farm near Atlantic City came from a worker in the energy industry who passed the idea on to Dovey in the early 2000s. Dovey believed that Atlantic City's ample breezes from land and sea would make it an ideal location. It then picked up support from former Governor Jim McGreevy's administration. Community Energy, Inc., a developer of wind power based in the Philadelphia suburbs, received a $1.7 million grant from the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities. The New Jersey Sierra Club backed the project, and construction began in mid-2005. Initially, the wind farm faced resistance. Residents in the neighboring Venice Park section of Atlantic City were concerned about potential noise from the turbines. To allay their fears, a bus trip was organized that took residents to visit a wind farm in Somerset County in Pennsylvania. Their concern was noise, Dovey, now 73, recalls. We drove literally underneath the turbine. A neighborhood leader took one step out of the car and said, "My air conditioner is louder than this. Let's go home." As part of its support for the project, New Jersey Audubon agreed to monitor the impact on the bird population. Their 3-year study found a small number of bird deaths that could be attributed to collisions with turbines. It goes on to say that more fatalities were caused by raccoons, feral cats, and collisions with wires. People were also concerned about the visual impact, feeling the turbines might spoil scenic views, affect property taxes, and hurt tourism. However, the wind farm has since become an iconic part of the landscape. MGM, Harrah's, and Borgata Casino Hotels are all in view of the windmills. One casino specifically said they were, quote, getting a lot of requests for windmill view rooms because it has a calming effect.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, coming to you from the station WDIY-FM in the ultimate Christmas city of Bethlehem, PA. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll hold the hand of a listener who wants to grow scarlet runner beans to attract hummingbirds. And along the way, we're going to drop a lot of helpful hints for those of you planning to buy seeds for the coming season. Plus, another one of your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100. Stephanie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you so much, and thanks for taking my question. I really appreciate it. I love you, and I love your show. I always learn a ton when I listen.
Well, thank you.
So here's my situation. I have a 4-year-old peach tree that about 2 months ago started oozing some kind of gooey substance from the base. Wasn't real tacky or sticky, almost real smooth like a silicone kind of goo, kind of a caramel coppery color.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked it up and it said it was a fungus, like a gumosis, if I'm saying that right. And it said it could also happen because of ants. And I had noticed around the same time.
Where are you getting this?
In my yard.
Where are you getting this?
I'm in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
I mean, but what kind of website is telling you that it's ants?
Oh, I just looked it up on Google. I said, you know, gumosis on peach trees. And they said it could be environmental, it could be because of your soil, or it could also come from insects burrowing
right.
holes into the bark.
You know, Google has become useless. First of all, the first 18 pages are all sponsored, and then you get into stupid AI that
I agree with that.
Trying to gain intelligence but doesn't have a clue. Which
right.
gives me hope, because if it has a clue, they're just going to run all over us. It'll be a robot world.
I concur.
Do you grow other things?
I do not, and I did not plant the peach tree. It was planted 4 years ago. I bought the house when the peach tree was 1 year, and then it produced beautiful fruit in its third and fourth year, and its fourth year was this last summer.
That's good. And
yeah, it's been perfect. It's been, all I've done was water it, do some fertilizing some extra dirt in the spring, and I talk to it, and it's been perfect. I haven't done anything else to it.
Well, you've already exceeded what most people get from peach trees.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. When I planted peach trees for my wife, I planted a dozen different varieties. And I was never so happy in my life when I found out that peach trees only have a lifespan of maybe 15 years, because each of the trees was taking me more time to protect than the entire rest of my garden, by far.
Right.
But you're in a different climate than I. Where I am, we probably have the most virulent peach tree diseases. What you're describing is probably the peach tree borer, B-O-R-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an insect that crawls in, sucks sap, and then some of the sap drips away, but there's also borer poop mixed in. It's absolutely lovely. It rivals truffles in recipes. So as of this year, did you harvest peaches?
Yes, I had a great peach crop. In fact, it just kept producing and was fantastic. And I shared all my peaches with my clients. And they loved them. They were juicy and sweet, just awesome. So no problem there. But like I said, a couple of months ago is when I noticed at the base it was just like this goo was coming out of the lower part of the bark.
So what you can do is, first of all, literally get a coat hanger and bend it and go on a hunt inside the holes and see if you can get the larval form of the borer.
Okay.
And if you do, bring it out and do whatever you wish to it. Nobody's watching you, you know. So it's up to you and your God what happens to what comes out.
Okay.
Now,
do I peel the bark away?
No.
Do I need to expand upon what's there? Just don't disturb the bark, but do try to investigate the holes that are there.
Just dig into the holes and take out anything living that you find. Now,
okay.
I also want you to go online and, using the Oklahoma State Extension website, look up the life cycle in your area of the peach tree borer. You're going to find a window of maybe 2 or 3 weeks where the adults are active and they're boring into the trees and laying eggs inside.
Okay, that's helped.
Oh, yeah, because then you'll be ready. And in the meantime, lay in a supply of Surround, S-U-R-R-O-U-N-D. It is a totally non-toxic spray of clay, but it forms a barrier that repels insects. They don't like to walk on it. You know, they'll go invade somebody else's peach trees. And if I were you, I would spray it top to bottom, follow the manufacturer's instructions. It'll come as a powder. You'll mix it with water as directed, and you'll spray the entire tree during this period. Now, if you want to be super smart, and I might lean towards that with you getting great peaches, you can buy a pheromone trap, set it out near the tree, and it's sticky inside, and it attracts the adult borers. And as soon as you see the first borer in the trap, take the trap down, wrap it up in 6 layers of plastic, and put it away. And that's when you really start soaking the tree with the Surround clay spray.
Okay.
You won't have to do it for long. It does look like a bad Christmas tree spray job in a discount department store window. But it is the number one cure for this type of problem, many other problems as well. Now, I want to add here that they mention ants, because once that sweet sap comes out, ants are attracted to it.
Okay.
A lot of times people who don't know what they're talking about are going to blame what they see, not what actually happened. And the ants are going to show up just for that. They're not part of the problem. Matter of fact,
they're the after party.
Oh, yes, they're the after party. A lot of insects fall under this category. They're just scavenging. But the clay spray will keep the ants away as well as the borers, and don't change a thing, obviously, because you've had success. I don't care if you're doing anything I agree with, but if you're getting peaches, keep doing what you're doing. No chemicals, nothing like that.
Yeah.
You should be able to have this spray ready. I mean, it's a dry powder. One shipment will last you 2 or 3 years at least for one tree.
Oh, that's great. What about temperatures here in the winter? I mean, right now we've had some really up and down kind of crazy weather where like the last two nights it's been with wind chill 6 degrees. And then like during the day today, it's going to get up into, you know, the 50s and 60s. Is there any time period that like I can spray that now? I can do that spray now if I order it? Or should I wait for the season when the borer is most active?
You should follow the borer's plans.
Okay.
But if one side of the tree is facing due south, you might want to paint the bark on that side of the tree with white latex paint, which will reflect the sunlight and prevent the outer part of the tree from splitting.
I got it.
And that's it. Easy peasy.
Okay.
Get a couple of things, be informed, and you'll eat peaches.
You know, funny, I do it. I do it all the time. And I said, you look thirsty. And I spray the whole tree down. It loves it.
No.
And it's just.
No, stop doing that.
Oh.
The only part of the tree that's absorbing water is the root system. And that root system starts about 6 inches to a foot away from the trunk.
Yeah.
That's the area you want to water because that's where the feeder roots are. Peaches are very sensitive to disease, so you never want to wet their leaves intentionally. Just let a hose drip around that area. Keep moving it around every hour, and do that once a week if you don't get rain.
Okay. Well, that's great. Well, I sure appreciate your advice. This is very helpful, and I knew that you would have the right answer for what I needed.
All right. My pleasure. I'm glad that I did. Talk to you later.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind all of you that poinsettias, introduced at the very first Philadelphia Flower Show, are a symbol of the season, but they are not outside plants in cold weather. Get them inside right away, remove that awful wrapping, put the plant in a few inches of water, and let it soak for an hour. Then pot it up into a bigger container. Don't let it dry out or stay soaked, and you'll have a cool plant to show off this summer. But don't go tending to that pretty plant just yet, because we'll be right back with Scarlet Runner Beans and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
For the past 3 decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to this service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8000. 8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. Coming up will be a great question of the week about scarlet runner beans and hummingbirds, and a lot of advice for those of you who are going to be buying seeds very soon. We'll also take a couple more of your fabulous phone calls. Number to call, 610-694-8100. Elisa, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Why, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you here, especially since you apparently sent us the soil test results that you're inquiring about. Very rarely do I get this much information. Now, we know you're in Johnson County, Kansas. Where is that?
Well, I'm right on the state line between Kansas and Missouri, right by Kansas City.
Okay, that's important. Okay, so do you want to frame your question, or do you want me to rip this thing apart on my own?
Well, my main reason for reaching out to you was that I had no idea that you could ever be considered to have too much organic matter in soil. I've worked really hard to incorporate a lot of organic matter, and so I was surprised when a soil test said, maybe it's too much. So that's what I was hoping you could educate me about.
Did you notice the title of the person who wrote the recommendations?
No.
Small farm agent.
Oh, okay.
So in most other soil tests, you can indicate whether you're a home gardener. Did you have that opportunity?
Yes, I did. I filled out pretty extensive paperwork about it, and so they knew that I'm a home gardener. And this is also not a typical soil test. The typical soil tests you can get are just for pH and then phosphorus and potassium, but I wanted to know about organic matter. Maybe that put me into a different category as they were doing the research.
Okay, where do we start? Your pH is listed as 6.2, and they say that's acceptable. Little low. I'd like to see it more up at 6.5. But okay. If you're getting good results, don't do anything. Now, okay. Your phosphorus levels and potassium levels are off the charts, which is very common in an organic garden. First of all, your organic matter is superb. You probably can't get it past 30. But you can't have too much organic matter. This soil test was written, as you may be able to see, if people added the recommended extra sources, one of which is criminal. Urea, huge source of nitrogen. It's fake pee. Like we don't
have... Yeah, I don't ever use that.
Yeah. No. The numbers are... cataclysmic, 4600. That is a higher level of nitrogen than the bombs that were used to blow up the Oklahoma Federal Building.
Good grief.
None of these. Nitrate of soda, 1600. Again, criminal. And then 33.3, which no plant on this planet once needs and probably would be killed by. So yeah. This is from the 20th century. This is a problem that honestly I thought had been solved. This is exactly why organic gardening was created. These kind of chemical salts destroy the soil. Over time, a farm or garden that's fertilized with this bad word stuff will lose topsoil, right?
Right.
They have no organic matter, which is why they couldn't understand yours. 10% organic matter, they say that's the maximum. Yeah, I'm close to wanting to meet these guys in a dark alley. This is out of control. most extension services have grown up. And they understand. Matter of fact, most of the soil test results I've seen, people can check the box if they're an organic gardener. And they get very different recommendations. Sometimes they check the box and they're still told to use 10-10-10, 20-20-20, 30-30-30, or some god-awful. You know, people buy those things because they think they're balanced. But there is no plant on this world that wants equal amounts of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. I play around with this a lot, but probably an ideal would be 6-3-4 or 6-4-3. That would provide everything your garden needs, and it would not be in a chemical salt form. It would be from natural ingredients. So
yeah, the only thing that I put in blood meal for nitrogen, and then I've done a little bit with chicken manure, and bone meal gives us some phosphorus, and then buffalo manure, we have that in heaps around here, and so I stir that in the fall.
Do you let the buffalo platters, something like that, age? Do you let it compost?
It's in a bag that is composted buffalo manure. So it already comes to me.
Oh, so it's store-bought. You're not going out and collecting it.
That's correct.
From the grazing herds.
Right.
That I hope still exist.
Around here they don't.
Okay. What's it labeled? Do you have any idea? NPK?
I don't have that in front of me.
Okay. If you want my guidelines, I need to know the numbers on your bags.
Okay.
Because you're supplying all this. Do you make compost?
Yes.
What do you make it out of?
It's primarily leaves and kitchen scraps.
Okay. Are the leaves shredded?
They're shredded.
Okay. Continue. It's not a...
It's not a very hot pile. It's more of a continuous add, and then a year and a half later, I can dig to the bottom and get the compost out of it.
You know, you have on site what it's going to take to make it a hot pile. Mix in the buffalo manure.
Oh, that's a good point.
Matter of fact, mix in the other elements there. And then, you know, when you put down granulated fertilizers, they're not active until they're covered by soil. They don't, they say scratch it into the soil. I mean, are we chickens?
Not the last time I checked.
Yeah. No. My neck is starting. No. So mix all your bags well with shredded leaves and not too many kitchen scraps. Don't go overboard. 10-20% of the pile is the maximum because they supply nitrogen too, but it tends to be cold nitrogen. If you take your bag stuff that you're buying, mix it into the pile as you make it, and maybe turn it once. You will have some mild spells over the winter. On a nice day, go out with a pitchfork or a garden fork, take the stuff off the top until you get down to the bottom, put that stuff on top, and the pile will be largely finished by spring, because I know you get harsh winters, but in general, your climate is more mild than mine here in Pennsylvania.
Yes, I think so.
I know so. I know everything. So this was very productive. I know a lot of people out there get their soil test results and freak out, but call us. Don't do anything without talking to me. So rage against the machine and say three Hail Marys, a perfect act of contrition, and sin no more.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. This was a great phone call for everyone out there.
Oh, good.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our phone number, 610-694-8100. Donna, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, thank you, Donna. How are you?
I'm doing well, just trying to stay warm.
Yeah, that's us down to Florida right now. Where are you?
Well, I'm in Hatboro, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay, just outside Philadelphia. What can we do you for?
Well, I have a dilemma. I have a small memorial garden in my front yard, and it has a hydrangea in it.
Yeah.
Now, I planted some cannas behind it for some height, and since it's in a sheltered space, they never die back. So now that I cut them kind of back for the winter, I can see that their stalks have grown right through my hydrangea. So my question is, what's the best method for separating these? I mean, I don't care about the cannas, but I need to save this hydrangea because it was a gift.
Okay. Yeah. I hate to correct you, but it's canna lilies.
Canna lilies. All right. Thank you.
So they come back year after year. Do they get enough sun to flower?
Oh, they're beautiful. Like I say, they've been in there probably 4 years now, and since it's sheltered, you know, they do wonderful. I don't have to dig them out.
Okay. Well, guess what? You have to dig
now
them out.
I have to dig them out. I know. Now, how do I do that without destroying my hydrangea?
Well, how close are they?
They're growing right up through it, middle.
But at the base of the plant.
Yeah, they're coming. The stalks are right through the middle of the plant, of the hydrangea.
Well, you must have planted them there.
No, I planted them about 2 feet away, and they've grown over. It's been several years. They're spreading.
Boy, I don't know. I've never had a hydrangea that spread, and I've never had a canna lily that spread. No. More than likely, if anything has happened, they've shifted due to freezing and thawing.
Okay.
So what you want to do is get out there with a very sharp shovel. So are the cannas right up against a wall?
Yeah, they're between the wall and the hydrangea.
Okay.
I sent a picture. I don't know if you received it.
Nah.
Okay.
James has it on his phone. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Those cannas are huge.
Yeah, they're very happy there.
Oh, my God, you got something else in front of the hydrangea.
Yeah, it's a little memorial garden. People give me plants, and I keep putting them in there. They're daylilies in front.
Okay, next time somebody gives you a plant, move it further out.
Yeah.
Because you really can't see the hydrangea in this mess.
Yeah, because it's sun blooming.
Okay, so you say you cut back the canna lilies.
Yes.
How much?
About, you know, a foot high.
Good. Okay. So approaching from the open side, you're going to go in there. You're going to put and of course, we're going to have to wait till the ground unfreezes.
Right.
But that's fine.
Yeah.
You're going to go in there with a sharp shovel, and you're going to go down much further than you think you need to. And then as best you can, if you can get the shovel in the ground behind it, do the best you can. And then take the shovel and the area on the side that you've shoveled, see if you can go in a little bit towards the hydrangea. And then get that shovel even deeper and really lean on the shovel. Really use that
leverage. Okay.
Yeah, as a fulcrum. And it should come up out of the ground. Canna lily roots are pretty hardy. So if you get it up and it's a little stuck, you can try to pull it out by hand, or you can, you know, just keep messing around with the shovel. And then put that to the side, and that'll give you access to the second one. You do the same thing. There's three of them, right?
I don't know. I don't know how many there are now. They've just completely spread and taken over the space.
Okay. Well, each one in its turn, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll keep digging.
And then fill in that space with a mixture of your own garden soil, but on the top, put a nice layer of compost to give a little extra feed boost to the hydrangeas in case their roots were impacted.
Okay.
Now, typically, you can actually sever a third of a plant's roots. And if it's healthy, it should be able to grow back.
Good to know.
Then dig some new holes, and hopefully you'll have another place to put the cannas.
Yeah, yeah. In my friend's garden.
Okay. Well, I mean, that area must be facing south.
It's facing east.
East is where the sun comes up. Sometimes,
right.
Depending on the angle of the property, east is as good as south.
Yeah.
It's the north,
yeah,
and the west that don't give you any bang for your buck.
Right.
But wait until the soil is warm enough to dig. Wait till maybe there's a little new growth on everything. And
okay.
Then if it's raining, if it's, you know, April showers, don't do anything. But if it doesn't rain, make sure you water right away, especially the cannas, but make sure that back of the hydrangeas is well watered. And stop making your garden look like a Japanese subway train at rush hour.
Well, I don't have to mulch.
No.
You can't see the dirt.
No. Pretty soon you won't be able to get out of your front door.
You're right. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mike. I'm going to tackle that in the spring.
All right. Good luck to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and suggest that a membership to the station that produces and distributes this show, WDIY-FM, would make an excellent holiday gift for a devoted listener who's hard to shop for, or yourself, not to mention us here at the station. And anyone who makes such a gift at WDIY.org before the new year will receive a lucky duck charm directly from me. But you got to ask for it. You got to mention You Bet Your Garden, and you should email me directly at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com so I know you did it. But don't go signing up your friends and family at WDIY.org just yet, because we'll be right back with Scarlet Runner Beans and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to WDIY-FM from Bethlehem, PA. What can you expect to hear next week? Hilarity, bad jokes, a small amount of useful information, and me. As long as these bolt cutters keep working. Boy, you know, this station must buy locks by the dozen. I'm Mike McGrath, and that's probably on the next You Bet Your Garden. Maybe. Plus your fabulous phone calls. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, coming to you from the station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA, the Christmas city. We're in the spirit right now, cats and kittens. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll hold the hand of a listener who wants to grow scarlet runner beans, plus another of your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100. Arnold, welcome to
Yes.
You Bet Your Garden.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you, Arnold. How are you?
I'm doing good.
And where is Arnold doing good?
Okay, this is a little town called Riverdale Park. It's in the Prince George's County, Maryland.
Oh,
it's,
sure.
It's very close to the University of Maryland.
What can we do you for?
Well, there were two questions I had. One is about the walnut tree. The other question, though, is about what fruits I can use in compost without raising the pH of the garden.
Oh, right. You emailed me about citrus.
Yes.
Okay, second one first.
Okay.
You can use any fruit except citrus. Citrus is corrosive. There are products that are made from concentrated peels of oranges that are used to wash graffiti off of buildings. It's also used in Texas, Oklahoma, places like that, as a treatment for fire ants.
Oh.
Yeah, I have struggled all my life with what to do with citrus. And quite honestly, we've resorted to just tossing it into the backwoods and hope that something good happens.
Okay.
But that would include lemons, limes, oranges, grapefruit, any of the citrus family. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any other fruit that would be a problem. Okay, let's go back to black walnuts. What specifically can I help you with?
Well, I don't know. Our next door neighbor, he lives a little bit east of us. So he has about four or five walnut trees, and I'm constantly going around the yard pulling out seedlings and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a couple of the trees, the branches are extending over into the garden. Just wondering if by chance of those leaves, would they raise the pH of the soil, or that's...
No. Black walnut trees contain a substance called juglone that is kryptonite for tomatoes and a large number of other plants. The highest concentration is in the root systems. Now, have you noticed tomatoes wilting?
Well, I've noticed tomatoes that haven't been doing a thing. We planted, I don't know how many plants, and I think we only got a couple of tomatoes out of them.
Yeah, because the roots of black walnuts extend, for a mature tree, 150 feet easy. If you put on your x-ray specs and look under your garden, the walnut roots are all down there. And it wouldn't even help to go on your side of the property line and slice off all the roots, because the juglone remains active in the soil for decades.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. But are you growing in raised beds or flat ground?
Oh, raised beds.
Okay. Would it be too much trouble to remake them?
No, I don't think.
Okay. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to clean out the raised beds. Now, that soil... should be good if you let it compost for a year or two. Or you can look up plants that do not react to juglone. There's plenty of good lists out there at university extension sites. What you'll do is take out all that old soil, which you can use to grow impervious crops and plants, and you want to lay thick cardboard across the bottom of the bed. Not, well, you know, I've been seeing a lot of thick cardboard around, but I tell people generally try to get one from a refrigerator or a gas range that gets dropped off. Even the Amazon boxes I get, they're perfectly okay. You just want to make sure that it is completely lined. And then you fill it up with fresh potting soil and compost and make sure you cage the plants carefully, because the root system is going to have to go sideways as opposed to down, and you don't want your plants falling over without a safety net.
Mm, okay.
Black walnuts are bad news, man. I wish I had a magic answer.
Yeah.
All right. We good, man?
We good.
Okay. Have a great year. I hope your problems are solved. Call us up mid-season and tell us how the cardboard and fresh soil worked. You're
all
out
right.
of time. I'd say we're out of time, but you're out of time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, Arnold, it's been a real pleasure, and good luck.
Okay, thank you very much.
As promised, it is time for the question of the week. A festive missive titled, Should You Start Scarlet Runner Bean Seeds Indoors? William Sage, I just had to include his last name this time, in Tyrone, PA, wants to perform an experiment. He writes, I'm too lazy to put up a hummingbird feeder. Actually, putting up the feeder isn't the hard part. Constantly cleaning it and refilling it is the hard part. But I love hummingbirds and want to plant flowers that will attract them. Every spring for the past several years, I've gone up to State College, where temporary greenhouses are set up in the parking lot of a very big box store across from the ghost town of our mall. I asked for scarlet runner beans, and they never have that exact species. So instead, I buy plants that they tell me will attract hummingbirds. That worked more or less until this year, when the plants didn't even blossom until late September. I recently went online to a seed company in Maine that you probably know of and had a small package of seeds sent to me. So here's the question. Can I start these seeds indoors and transplant them already growing outdoors in the spring so they'll produce blossoms and attract hummingbirds in the summer, if not sooner? I have a sun porch and a kitchen window that both face almost due south. Is that enough, or do I need a grow lamp? If I start them on the sun porch, do I need to heat the starter containers? Well, we got quite a few questions wrapped up in here. Let's begin with indoor seed starting. I have never thought of growing any kind of bean ahead of time. To me, they're a classic direct-seeded summer crop. But I have seen green beans and the like pre-started in some garden centers, so I guess people do it. But don't try it yourself if you haven't started seeds indoors before. I always warn people at this time of year that starting seeds indoors is much more difficult than growing plants outdoors. For instance, how cold do your, quote, sun porch and kitchen window get at night? I'm guessing it's freezing cold on your side of the glass. And yes, you need lights to avoid growing plants that look like Wilt Chamberlain and Joel Embiid. Tall and skinny is good for hoops, but bad for plants. And the winter sun is at the wrong angle for decent seed starting, and those starts always struggle. And you didn't buy enough seeds to experiment with trying to do this both ways. I checked the site you used, and it looks like you bought a packet of 55 seeds for $6.20. But you could have bought a half pound, 215 seeds, for $12 and a nickel. Then you'd have enough to fool around with, and you'd be paying a solid 70% less for each seed. A word to the wise for all of yous who are about to order seeds. Larger packets are always a better buy per seed, especially when you're talking peas and beans, which store well and can be planted close together. I'm also going to chastise William for driving so far when I found 10 local garden centers in your immediate area. Please stay away from big box stores. Local independent garden centers are important to the community and just as endangered as family farms. End of that rant. Scarlet runner beans, a wonderful heirloom variety whose seeds are among the most beautiful in all of horticulture, should be planted outdoors along a tall trellis towards the end of May, early June in your area, to be flowering in August. About a week before, wrap the seeds you intend to plant in slightly moist paper towels and put them inside a Ziploc that isn't zipped. Let it breathe. Mist the seeds gently if a few days go by without sprouts. But when little squiggly sprouts appear, get ready to plant. You're now ahead by a week or two. Obtain some pea and bean inoculant and roll the sprouted seeds gently in this black powder, which is a beneficial bacteria that allows peas, beans, and other legumes to take their own plant-feeding nitrogen out of the air we breathe, which is mostly nitrogen. You'll get healthier plants that feed themselves, and the spent vines are a great compost addition to shredded leaves in the fall. Do not skimp on that trellis. Like most other pole beans, scarlet runners grow extremely tall. I run them up one side of a sturdy 6-foot-tall trellis and then coax them to grow back down the other side. As with all flowering plants, the more sun they get, the more flowers you'll get. And your area doesn't normally crank up the heat in summer, so you won't have to worry about protecting them from extremely high temperatures. Water them gently every day until sprouts appear, then back off and only water once a week if it goes by without rain. And don't overfeed them. An inch or two of high-quality compost would be ideal. If you must, quote, feed, use an organic fertilizer with a low first number on the label. That would be N for nitrogen. Add too much nitrogen and you'll diminish flowering. That also means no manure. Forget about it. And you want to add a nice 4 or 5 each on the label for phosphorus, which is P, and potash, aka potassium, which is K. No 10, 10, 10, or 20, 20, 20, or other toxic explosive nonsense. As the first flowers fade, delicious green beans will follow. Pick and eat these treats when they're young and small for best flavor and more future flowering. The more you pick, the more new flowers you're going to get. And yes, there are many other flowers that attract hummers. Anything with red tubular flowers that isn't trumpet vine. Although it's a native, as are scarlet runner beans, it's an incredibly aggressive grower that quickly gets out of control. Well, those sure were some great hummingbird helper suggestions. Now, wasn't they? Luckily, you can read the details over at your leisure or your leisure by following the link for the Gardens Alive question of the week at the top of the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Yikes! My producer is threatening to harass my hummingbirds if I don't get out of the studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming to our garden shore at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. Oh, and maybe tell us where you live. And visit our Facebook page where we post new photos of our gardens and invite you to send us photos of your precious plants. Share your thoughts about the show. Provide important and informational updates about the show. A link to the written version of the Gardens Alive Question of the Week. And links to our priceless podcast. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when he got a major Mac Mason space station, including action figure and batteries, for Christmas, but he really wanted a great car look. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprote. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome Ninja Sean. And now, a word from Gina Smith, who along with the always reliable Joanna Black, puts together the online print version of the Garden's Alive Question of the Week, alluding to our recent missive on ice melters. She writes, a question, is there a new process for generating what comes from Mike to us? This doesn't sound like his authentic, slightly snarky voice. Something just feels off. I feel like Buddy the Elf. You don't smell like Santa. You smell like beef and cheese. Seriously, where is Mike McGrath and what did you do with him? To which I can only reply, I'll never let Buddy write the column. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'll be settling down for a long winter's nap until I can see you again next week. In the meantime, happy hyacinth to all, and to all a good night blooming series. Ho, ho, ho. That's H-O-E, of course. Now get these elves out of here. They're messing up all my seed packets. Hey, you, get back on the shelf.